Mim al el gvurot Yisrael otan mi yimne, hein b'chol dor yakum ha-gibor goel ha'am. Who can retell the things that befell us? Who can count them? In every age a hero or sage came to our aid. Shema b'yamim ha'em b'zman hazeh makah b'moshiah ufodeh uv'yameinu kol am Yisrael yitached yakum v'yigael. Mim al el gvurot Yisrael otan mi yimne, hein b'chol dor yakum ha-gibor goel ha'am.
Again this morning, at the darkest time of the year, we draw on the stories and rituals and traditions that celebrate light. Today, in particular, we celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah, according to Arthur Waskow, is the moment when light is born from darkness, hope from despair. Today, in many ways, and with the help from many traditions, we celebrate the importance of this light in our life. As Mike now lights our chalice, I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting printed in your order of service. Candles, fire, and stars, these are the symbols of this most blessed of season. Candles for banishing the darkness, fire to warm hearth and home, and stars to beckon us, guiding our footsteps to the holiest. In ancient times, candles were mounted on wagon wheels that were decorated with evergreens. They were lit during the dark weeks leading up to the winter solstice, when the return of the light was celebrated. Christians adopted a similar tradition of lighting candles on a wheel during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, celebrating the light that Jesus brought to the world. Each candle stands for one of the messages of the Advent season. Today, this third Sunday, Mike will light three candles. The first for hope. Hope that uplifts our spirits. Hope that gives courage to those experiencing difficult times. Hope for a more just society where racism doesn't raise its ugly head and everyone is treated with equal worth and dignity. Hope that we claim for ourselves and the hope that we bring to others. Second candle for peace. For peace in our hearts and in our homes, for peace in our country and in our world, especially peace in our cities where people are expressing their views through protest. And a third candle for love. Love for those we know so well and for those that we've never met. Love for the stranger, for the poor, for the downtrodden. Love that heals all wounds and puts to flight all fears. And now we move from our Advent wreath to our Hanukkah menorah. Let me tell you about it. It has eight branches, all of the same height, and one that goes higher in the center. That central candle is called the shamus, or the helper candle, because it's used to light the others. The candles are lit every evening in Hanukkah to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah, to make sure people remember the story. We're going to tell that story in a few minutes. Hanukkah is 8 days long, and each candle represents one of those days. And even though Hanukkah doesn't actually start until Tuesday, we're going to, in the interest of celebration, pretend that we're already on the eighth day and light all of the candles. As Mike lights them, I'll say for you the traditional blessing of the candles. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who sanctified us by your commandments and commanded us to kindle the light of Hanukkah, who wrought miracles for our ancestors in days of old at this season, and who kept us alive and preserved us and enabled us to reach this time. Back a couple of thousand years, the story of Hanukkah begins in the land of Judea, where the Jewish people had lived for centuries. A very powerful king named Antiochus from Syria had conquered the Jewish people, held them prisoner in their own land. Antiochus has a big army, and they tried to destroy the Jewish religion and make the Jewish people worship their gods instead of their own one God. The army took over the great city of Jerusalem, destroyed the holy temple there, threatened to kill the people who did not give up their religion. Some of the Jews did, but most did not. Many fled into the hills outside of Jerusalem and worked together to find a way to be free again, to be able to practice their religion again. Eventually, they could take the oppression no more, and some of the brave Jewish people decided to fight Antiochus and his powerful army. And they were led by a man by the name of Judah. He lived with others who had fled Jerusalem in a village high in the hills outside the city. And he and his followers were known as the Maccabees. They were greatly outnumbered by Antiochus's army, but they were smart. And finally, they won back the city of Jerusalem and freed the Jewish people. When Judah and his followers got to the great temple in Jerusalem, they discovered that it had been badly damaged. But they found the special lamp, the lamp that was always supposed to be burning in the temple, because its flame represented the presence of God. And they also found just a little bit of the oil used in the lamp, maybe enough for one day. But it was so important to have that lamp burning again that they lit it, even with just this small amount of oil. Quickly, Judah sent his two brothers running on foot to a city where they could get more oil. But it was an 8-day journey. They'd never make it back with the oil in time to keep the lamp in the temple from going out. But amazingly, the lamp kept burning for 8 days until the oil arrived. Hanukkah is the celebration of two miracles: the triumph of the Jewish people against the powerful Antiochus, when they regained their freedom and their religion, and the miracle of the oil lasting for 8 days. The 8 days of Hanukkah, symbolized by those 8 candles on the menorah, remind us of the struggle of the Jewish people to keep the light of their faith burning, even in times of oppression. Hanukkah is a celebration of how ancient Jewish people held on to hope, even when things didn't look good, even when they were outnumbered. But it's also a celebration that reminds us to hold on to hope today. Hope that gives us courage and strength, just like it did them. And sometimes, when we don't give up, when we hold on to hope, we too can do things that seem almost impossible. You know, Hanukkah is full of lots of wonderful songs. You heard Mike sing one of them earlier. Now he's going to invite us to join with him in another, and he will explain how that works.
We're going to sing number 221, Light One Candle. It's a song about the Hanukkah story and about something that the composer thought of when lighting each of the 8 candles. So I'll sing all the words to the verses because there's a bunch of them. But we can sing the chorus. If you turn the page to the next page, the chorus is at the bottom there, and we'll practice it once right now with me and Zonghi.
Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. doth let it shine through our love and our tears.
Okay, so you come in when we get to that part. Here we go.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks that their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. But light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. Light one candle for the strength that we need to never become our own foe. Light one candle for those who are suffering the pain we learned so long ago. Light one candle for all we believe in, that anger won't tear us apart. And light one candle to bring us together with peace as the song in our heart. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears. What is the memory that's valued so highly? We keep it alive in that flame. What's the commitment to those who have died when we cry out they've died not in vain? Have we come this far always believing that justice would somehow prevail? This is the burden, and this is the promise, and this is why we will not fail. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out. Let it shine through our love and our tears.
A few years ago, while I was visiting friends in Berlin, Germany, I went to the newly opened Jewish Museum there. And if you ever have occasion to be in Berlin, please do go. Words cannot really describe the way that the architecture and the exhibit guide you through the history of the Jewish people from biblical time to today. It is such a moving experience to witness the great accomplishments, the faith, the courage, the fortitude, the integrity, the Jewish people within the almost continual context of what in good times could be called discrimination and in bad times persecution, murder, even genocide. And as I walked through that museum, one question kept cropping up in my mind. The question was, what kept them going? Why didn't they just give up? Why did they restart, re-engage, and take the risk again and again to live fully as Jews, even when logic would have said, just forget it? Why did they continue to try so hard to accomplish things for the world, knowing that at the same time they were rejected, despised, and excluded? And so often their very survival was threatened. The answer I took away from that museum is also what I believe is the central message of Hanukkah. That is, you must never let hope die. You have to, in the words of that hymn, say yes to life and yes to truth and yes to love, even when death and lies and hate are all around you. There surely were times for the Jewish people when it was very hard to keep hope alive, hard to say yes. Yet somehow they did it. And I'm not talking just about ancient times. I'm talking about more recent times as well. You know, when the Gestapo arrested Tristan Bernard, the author, he said these words to his wife: "The time of fear is over. The time for hope has begun." The Jews, ancient and modern, hung on to hope because hope is what transforms fear. It can certainly take great courage to claim hope and act upon it, just as it did for those Maccabees and for Jews throughout the century. Hanukkah is all about hope and its sister virtue, courage. Hope and courage that often defy logic, often fly in the face of the facts. The well-known Unitarian Universalist writer Norman Cousins states it this way: "The case for hope has never rested on provable facts or rational assessments. Hope, by its very nature, is independent of the apparatus of logic. What gives hope its power is not the accumulation of demonstrable facts, but the release of human energies generated by the longing for something better. The capacity for hope," he says, "is the most significant fact in life. It provides human beings with a sense of destination and the energy to get started. It enlarges sensitivity. It gives values to feelings as well as facts." These words really capture the essence of the Hanukkah story, I think. It was not logical to think that this small group of oppressed people could rise up and gain their freedom. Traditional wisdom would have said, "Don't try anything, you'll fail and be in more trouble than you're in already." But they disregarded the logical constraints and acted because they had that audacity to hope for something better. There was such a longing for something better that it energized them to do the seemingly impossible. They defeated their oppressors and reclaimed their temple. And even though they could see there was very little oil, not enough to keep the lamp burning until some more oil could be obtained, they lit the sacred lamp anyway. Just maybe it would somehow keep burning until the new supply would arrive. And isn't that what we're called to do again and again? To forget the naysayers or the pessimists within that are telling us it makes no sense to be hopeful. Be daring. Go ahead and light the lamp of hope anyway. My visit to that museum in Berlin reminded me that this kind of hope has a long tradition with the Jewish people. In fact, as I reflected on the Hebrew Bible and Scripture, you could say that hope is the dominant theme. Holding on to hope was what kept the Jews alive and allowed their faith tradition to continue. They knew that when hope was gone, things would be over for them. They knew that approaching a difficult situation with hearts filled with hope had a positive effect on the outcome. And they also knew the opposite, that when hope is lost, all is lost. In Proverbs, it's written, "Where there's no vision, that is, where there's no hope, the people perish." We can find a similar holding on to hope in the struggle of black men and women in our own country. Dr. King wrote, "We must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope." And the contemporary black theologian Cornel West, when speaking about the ongoing struggle with racism in our nation, said, "I'm not an optimist, but I'm a prisoner of hope." And you know, in the Muslim tradition, the prophet is asked, "What should one do if they know the world will end tomorrow?" And his answer? Plant a tree. This message of hope comes to us from so many religious traditions. And especially at this time of Hanukkah and Advent and Christmas and Solstice and Kwanzaa. These are all holidays that celebrate hope. They're there, I think, on this calendar at this darker time of the year to fan the flickering flame of hope that burns in each of us. Hope and courage are not virtues found in great stories of religious women of our past and men of our past who've harnessed that power to get through extraordinary difficult times. They're not just there. We all have the need to find the hope planted deep inside us again and again, especially at times when the facts don't look good. It's the hope that gives us the courage to rekindle the flame within us, even when we're not sure if we have enough in us to keep it burning. Unitarian Universalist minister Albert Perry wrote, "I have planted a hope in my heart. All that I can touch and see reminds me of my mortal limitations and my cosmic insignificance. Every pain and pang tells me that I have but temporary possession of this dust that is today mine and me. I may die tomorrow. Surely I shall not survive 100 years. But my hope is larger than my limitations and braver than my body. Through my hope, I escape the remorseless march of time and the lack of meaning in material existence. Hopes do not die, and a hoping heart is the stuff of eternity." Recently, a friend of ours who we'd not seen in a while visited with Malcolm and me. And I was reminded of the story of his life partner who had died several years earlier after a long and courageous battle with cancer. He never lost hope, but as the disease advanced, his hopes changed. I remember being with him in Provincetown after he'd finished his first treatment regimen. He was full of hope for a complete cure. And a few years later, his hope was that the medication would maintain the status quo, not cure the cancer, but keep it from spreading. Later, he hoped to be strong enough to come back to Provincetown to vacation or to make another trip to Europe with his partner. He never was unrealistic about his condition, but he was always at the same time hopeful about his future. His last summer, even though he wasn't feeling well at all, he insisted on going shopping and buying his partner an expensive Christmas gift, and then wrapping it in beautiful Christmas paper right away, which, by the way, was a bit of a challenge for us because it's hard to find good Christmas paper in July. He bought it early and wrapped it early because he was concerned he wasn't going to be able to go shopping later. His hope was to be around for Christmas to present the gift himself, but he put it where it would be found easily, just in case. And towards the end, he hoped for a good day without much pain or another visit from a special friend. He hoped to live on in the stories of his friends. I've told this one before, so I guess he'd be happy with that. And he hoped to see God. Hope was important to him right until the end. His hope was unyielding. His doctors never believed he would live as long and as well as he did. My recollection was that he lived well over 10 years from his diagnosis till his death with a very serious cancer. I'm sure it was his capacity for hope that kept him living those many years and kept him living fully that time. Now, I don't want to make hope sound easy. These are difficult times for many, and some of us have life histories that make it difficult for us to hold on to hope. Some of us now are out of work and have been out for a long time and are scared. Some of us struggle with physical and mental illness. Some of us are in difficult relationships where it's just hard to feel hopeful. But within us, even when our temple is in ruins, is that lamp of hope. Maybe its flame is flickering and on the verge of going out. And if it is, I pray you can find that courage to fan the flame and let hope glow in your life. We must hold on to hope, fan the flame of hope within us when it's in danger of going out. But we must also be the source of hope for others. This season of Hanukkah and Advent and Solstice remind us we should ask ourselves daily, how can we better live hope, not just for ourselves, but for others too? And there are many ways. Find kind words. Visit those who are experiencing difficult times. Maybe carry a sign at a peace or a racial justice rally. Buy a Christmas gift for a child at a domestic violence shelter, like many of you have done. Send a simple gift bag to a child in India, like many of you are doing. Or, as I'll do this week, wire money from the Minister's Discretionary Fund to our partner church in Transylvania, so lots of gifts for the elderly and the children can be purchased. You know, the word Hanukkah literally means, if you translate it, dedication. And, of course, that refers to the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem. But this Hanukkah, I'm asking you to rededicate yourself to being a minister of hope to our troubled world. Things can be so tough that alone we just can't find the hope within us sometimes. Lots of people in lots of different life situations need some hope right now. Maybe you do. Maybe someone in your family does, or your neighborhood. Surely someone in your church does. Someone needs help to rekindle that flame of hope. You can do it for them. We can't make everything right for people, nor will our lives be magically transformed. But there is this powerful medicine called hope, which can sometimes cure and sometimes relieve pain, sometimes affirm our value and worth, sometimes give us courage to take the next step, sometimes just lift our spirits and remind us of the preciousness of this gift we call life, even when times are tough. So don't worry about the holiday shopping. I should worry, I haven't started, but you already have the perfect gift to give. Hope is the perfect gift this year. So go ahead, light the lamp of hope, even if the oil is low. Claim hope boldly for yourself. Share it generously, even wastefully, with others. Nothing's more important than to bless the world with hope. There just never can be enough hope.